Okay, while electric vehicle fans gather in Missouri, Federal Reserve policymakers are meeting today here in Washington, D.C. Interest rates in the United States are incredibly low right now, and it looks like the Fed wants them even lower. One widely talked about move officials are considering has an unusual name. It's called Operation Twist. Robert Smith from NPR's Planet Money team put on his dancing shoes to explain how it could make borrowing even cheaper.
It is not a coincidence that Operation Twist sounds a lot like the dance craze from the 60s, because they share a common inspiration, Chubby Checker. Come on, baby. Let's do the twist. In the early 60s, there was a transformation on the dance floor. Up until then, boys danced with girls by actually holding each other. But after seeing Chubby Checker do the twist, those kids dropped their hands, moved apart, and go like this. Meanwhile, at the Federal Reserve, the nation's economic leaders were coming up with a different crazy move.
Economists know about this. This is sort of a famous episode from the 1960s.
Randy Krosner was once a governor of the Federal Reserve. Now he's a professor at the University of Chicago. And Krosner says that back in the early 60s, the country had some of the same problems we face today, a weak economy and a growing debt. And the Fed thought,
well, maybe there's a way to try to bring down the financing costs for the government.
The Fed came up with a plan to nudge down long-term interest rates. In fact, they wanted to be known as the Nudge. But come on, nobody wants to dance the Nudge. It became known as Operation Twist after that dance craze.
Hey, everybody, get in line. We're going to make a twist train.
So it's 50 years later. Nobody twists anymore. And Operation Twist was a footnote in Fed history. So why try it again? Well, the Fed has a problem. Usually the Federal Reserve stimulates the economy by lowering short-term interest rates. If you want more money to flow around the economy, you make borrowing cheaper. But the Federal Reserve has already driven those short-term rates down to almost zero.
They've been hammering at that pretty hard, so they're looking for an additional hammer.
The Fed needs another trick to perk up the economy. And all of a sudden, that old dance was back in fashion.
We're going to do the twist, and it goes like this.
So the twist tries to twist down the interest rates on longer-term loans. And the Fed does this by buying and selling treasury bonds out in the marketplace. They basically sell a bunch of short-term bonds that they have lying around. And the Fed will use that money to buy up a bunch of longer bonds, say 10-year treasury bonds. And that demand helps push the interest rates down.
10 years, because a lot of home mortgages are very closely associated with the 10-year rate.
If the Fed tries the twist again, and if it works like it's supposed to, then it should get even cheaper to get a mortgage or to take out a business loan, and people will start to spend again. But there are no guarantees. I mean, just think about houses. There are a lot of reasons why people don't buy homes. Maybe they fear losing their job, or they think that prices are still heading down.
The interest rate is one very important price, but it's not the only one.
The consulting firm Macroeconomic Advisors ran the numbers to see if the twist will work. If the Fed buys enough bonds, they figured that something like 350,000 jobs will be created over the next 2 years. Not bad, but pretty modest. And Tulio Bomfim is one of the economists who did the study. And he says there's only so much the Federal Reserve can do by just manipulating the interest rates. He says the Fed is like Chubby Checker, dancing by himself, without any help from Congress or the president.
Monetary policy cannot do this alone in terms of helping bring the economy back to a better footing at a faster pace.
Yeah, so perhaps the twist is the wrong metaphor here, because the Federal Reserve needs a partner.
Needs a partner.
They need to waltz or something.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's a good one.
But until Congress and the president and the Federal Reserve stop stepping on each other's toes, there's not going to be any waltz. The twist is just about the only move the Fed has left. Robert Smith, NPR News, New York.
Federal Reserve officials reveal this afternoon what, if anything, they're going to try next to resuscitate the U.S. economy. And to talk about what they might do and some new political pressure the Fed is feeling, we turn to David Wessel, economics editor of The Wall Street Journal. Good morning and welcome back, David.
Good morning, David.
So can the Fed do anything that'll make a big difference to the economy, to jobs?
No.
Okay.
They'll do something, probably. They might reduce the already low interest rate. It's a quarter percentage point that they paid banks that put extra money on deposit at the Fed the theory is that would give the banks a little more incentive to lend the money out to people instead of just leaving it at the Fed. And they might reorganize their huge portfolio of government securities to push down already low long-term interest rates. This is a move that's been called Operation Twist. But neither one is likely to be a magic cure for the economy. At best, it'll be a modest help.
Operation Twist. It sounds sort of like a dance they're doing. But I mean, you say that these are modest steps, but they already seem to be generating some controversy, some criticism from Republican politicians. What's going on?
Yeah, it's really interesting. First, we had four of the presidential Republican candidates piling on, criticizing Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, saying they wouldn't reappoint him, saying what he's been doing is inflationary. And yesterday, four top Republican leaders in the House and Senate released a very unusual letter to Mr. Bernanke, asking him not to do anything more to help the economy for fear that whatever he does could hurt it. It's unusual because politicians almost always want the central bank to do more, lower interest rates, put more credit in. But the Republicans are saying, no, don't do that. Apparently, they see the Fed as very unpopular with the voters and see Mr. Bernanke as an ally of Barack Obama and have been convinced by critics of the Fed that what the Fed's been doing is making things worse rather than better.
And what's their central argument, briefly? I mean, it's saying that the Fed could be exacerbating the problems.
Well, basically, they say that the things that the Fed did didn't help the economy. They actually suggest they may have heard them. And they cite a number of economists, a minority to be sure, who say that the steps that the Fed has taken are at risk of creating a lot of uncertainty, which you know is a big Republican concern at the moment, and could create inflation down the road, where the Fed thinks just the opposite, that we don't have too much inflation down the road.
Does the Fed usually respond to this kind of political pressure? Does it make a difference?
Well, Fed officials say they don't respond. Mr. Bernanke's view is that the law gives him a mandate, aim for stable prices and maximum employment. His forecast is that inflation will be below the Fed's target, unemployment will be way above the Fed's target, so he has an obligation. If there's anything the Fed can do to help, it should do it. But it's hard to believe that this kind of political pressure doesn't play some role in Fed thinking, especially when it's uncertain about whether the tools it still has can make much difference. I mean, the Fed was stunned by the adverse political reaction when it decided last year to buy $600 billion in long-term treasuries to try and help the economy. And although it is meant to be independent of elected political leaders, it is, after all, a creature of Congress. It's accountable to Congress, so it's hard to believe they ignore it.
And briefly, David, I guess it's worth mentioning this is a period where there are some deep internal divisions inside the Fed.
Absolutely. One of the reasons the Republican elected officials are emboldened is that there's three or four people on the Fed 17-member committee who agree with them and think the Fed shouldn't do any more for fear that if the Fed does too much now, we'll get too much more inflation later, and they feel that that's the worst thing the Fed could do for the economy.
All right. David Wessel, economics editor of The Wall Street Journal, thanks as always for joining us.
You're welcome.
This week's global diplomacy here in New York takes place against a backdrop of economic anxiety. Lenders are preparing for another visit to Greece. They will discuss the next installment of a $150 billion bailout. Without the money, Greece would default, with unpredictable consequences for the world. But the bailout comes with conditions that Greeks increasingly resent. Some are telling NPR's Sylvia Pagioli that default is not such a bad idea.
The taxi driver's car radio is tuned to a news program. The voice is that of Kostas Kordas. He's a former employee of the Greek Statistics Bureau who claims that European Union officials pressured Greece to revise and inflate its 2009 deficit figures in order to justify a desperate need for rescue loans. It's claims like these that feed a sense that Greece has been used as a scapegoat for the global financial crisis. Nikos Frangakis, president of the Center for European Studies and Research, says anger is mounting against Germans pointing their finger at Greeks, repeating old stereotypes, but ignoring the fact that their economic strength is also due to Greek consumers.
And therefore, they cannot easily swallow a German position that, it is your fault, Southern Europeans, that you are at default, therefore you should pay and don't expect the German taxpayer to cover your debts because the German taxpayer has benefited as well.
Many Greeks say the country has to fend for itself, and the D word, default, once a taboo, is being repeated more and more often. At an Athens University cafeteria, medical student Evangelia Angelina describes the devastating effect of austerity measures on the Greek educational system. No more books for high school students, and more than 1,000 schools have been closed. Angelina is the daughter of a plumber and a cleaning woman, and she fears the government will now impose hefty university tuition fees. She prefers default.
I think that it will be a good idea if it's our decision. I mean the Greek people's decision.
The government has already slashed public sector wages and pensions and raised the value-added tax a whopping 10% from 13 to 23. 100,000 small businesses shut down this year, and the EU is pressing Greece to lay off perhaps as many as 100,000 state employees and impose another 40% cut in civil servants' salaries. Greek default is now openly debated. One of the most quoted economists is New York University's Nouriel Roubini, who describes the bailout as a ripoff and urges Greece to default. Greek economist Yanis Varoufakis shares that view.
Greece must default. And the logic is very simple. When you have a huge debt built up and a debt overhang following a financial crisis, it is impossible to repay your debts, even if you are extremely willing to do so, simply by cutting through austerity. Austerity will make the debt crisis worse, always has done, always will do.
Varoufakis is outraged by the divisions among the EU partners and says their policies are just aimed at buying time. They refuse to acknowledge, he says, that the Greek crisis is just a symptom of a much bigger crisis within the European banking system.
Greece has not been bailed out. All the bailout money goes to the Greek state in order to repay the banks. Well, give it directly to the banks.
The contagion has started, says Varoufakis, affecting Italy, Spain, and France. He says this will ultimately force the EU to face the core issue, the lack of political and fiscal unity behind the euro, the common currency. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News, Athens.
Default or not, there are plenty of questions about what the Greek crisis means for Europe, really the rest of the world. NPR's Philip Reeves put those questions to some financial experts in London.
One big question hangs over Europe right now. What if? What if all the efforts to bail out Greece eventually fail and the Greeks leave the eurozone? Not so long ago, that question would have sounded far-fetched. Not anymore. Michael Hughes is among a growing number of economics analysts who think the Greeks will be forced out of the currency.
I think they will. My expectation is that you will see a different Europe coming out of this.
17 countries use the euro. By comparison with the heavyweights, Germany, France and Italy, Greece is very small. Yet if any of the 17 pull out of the currency, the impact would be momentous, says Martin Wolf, chief economics commentator for the Financial Times.
An exit from the euro is an Armageddon event. It is a political event of the first order. It involves in some way disassembling the European Union itself. It could not be done without triggering a wave of capital flight and banking sector implosion. My own view is not just in Greece, but in quite a number of other countries. They will do everything in their power, I would assume, to prevent that.
What if that can't be prevented? How do you, in fact, leave the euro?
You would have to reintroduce capital controls, very difficult to do, very difficult to make work. You would have to close your banks. You'd have to issue a new currency and separate your central bank from the European system of central banks. You would be breaking EU law, and technically you would have to be thrown out of the European Union. You couldn't do any of this without somebody realizing this was going to happen. So the runs would occur at once. You would trigger runs, in my view, across much of Mediterranean Europe. So it would be a major systemic crisis.
When Greece withdraws from the euro, and I think it is when rather than if, the Greek banks will all be nationalized. The Greek government will devalue something like 50 to 70%.
Andrew Lillico is from the economics policy consultancy Europe Economics.
All Greek debts will be redenominated into the new drachma, or whatever the new Greek currency is called. The consequence of this will be very large losses for certain banks in other parts of the eurozone. There'll be spillover effects from that.
That spillover would be felt globally, including in the US. In Europe, says Michael Hughes, the crisis would threaten other economically weak eurozone countries.
Because if you have a Greek default or if Greece leaves, the markets will automatically believe that other countries, and particularly Portugal and Spain, might head the same way. So you're really looking at a scenario which can divide the euro generally and may not just be as specific as Greece alone leaving.
In other words, the eurozone would unravel. Martin Wolf of the Financial Times thinks if that happens, the European single market would fall apart, and the European Union itself, the foundation stone of post-war regional stability, would be at risk. The stakes could hardly be higher, which is why Wolf thinks the current negotiations over the Greek bailout will go down to the wire.
I understand that Greece will run out of money in about 3 weeks. So if that's correct, I would expect the negotiations to go on for almost that long, but to be successful in the end, in the sense that they won't allow Greece to default at this stage. I actually think, given the international context, the pressures, it just sort of seems inconceivable that they won't come through in the end.
Philip Reeves, NPR News, London.